had a funny Overwatch moment the other day because I've got this really cool convertible and I was putting the top up and listening to, I think it was We Are Overwatch. And just the way, you know, the slow motion, all the moving parts at the top and stuff. It was like the moon landing. It was just so cool. Yeah. This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington, and it is my great pleasure today to talk with Neil Acree. It's wonderful to have a chance to catch up with you.
Likewise. So great to talk to you.
Well, it'll be fun to you know, really dig in, and I'd love to spend a little time talking about your work with Overwatch and World of Warcraft and Revelation, but the big sort of front and center project right now is Rend, this amazing survival game that you're working on for Frostkeep Studios. I'd love to know how you got attached to the game.
Well, they were familiar with my work and they reached out to my agent, and you know, that's one of the best ways is, you know, they found me and wanted to work with me. And it started with the trailer. They needed a way to announce the game, and my experience doing cinematics and kind of big game trailers was a plus. So, and once we did that, then, you know, I see this wide open world with no music in it, and I wanted to dive in. So
yeah, that sounds like I don't know. I can't really imagine what that feels like to just be able to populate the world or bring the world to life with your music. It must be a really great feeling when you're starting kind of with a blank slate like that.
Yeah, it's one of the most exciting things about the game process is not only figuring out what kind of music to do, but what function the music's going to have. You know, where in the world it's going to be, and kind of figuring out all those things. And then usually with me, that I start writing the second I have a conversation with the game team or I see some artwork, music starts getting written in my head. And it's just, you know, I have to get to a place where I can put it down as quick as possible. And this is definitely one of those cases where, you know, just the world they described to me and the visual imagery, everything was just really just opened up a lot of ideas.
Yeah, I bet, because what I've seen from the little bit of gameplay and the trailer, it's a really intense world with the different factions that are fighting each other, and as well as all of the creatures and kind of otherworldly monsters that are that can pop up too. And so it must have given you a lot of really great ideas for how to shape all of that music.
Yeah, the thing that was most fascinating to me, the way they described the world, and I'm going to do my best to paraphrase what they were saying, is it's sort of like these warriors, almost like, it's loosely based on the Viking mythology, but sort of these warriors have come to this afterlife, and they start with nothing, and they have to go, you know, break off branches and make arrows and spears to be able to hunt for food and to build, you know, shelter, that kind of thing. And then that develops into they're fighting each other for survival. But these warriors are honing their skills in this sort of afterlife setting to be able to ascend to the great battle in the sky.
Wow.
So there's sort of this spiritual aspect to it while still being, you know, there's plenty of danger. There's caves and all these, you know, different places to explore. And be not just a survival game, but it's like, you know, a hardcore survival game where it's like, you know, a lot of you're having to fight really hard to just to survive and constantly challenged in every way. But the thing that resonated with me was the kind of the spiritual aspect of it. And that kind of led me to thinking about, you know, Viking funeral music and kind of creating this setting where you're already, you know, it's not just your typical kind of historical thing where you're, you know, Vikings running around killing people, but this is sort of a different kind of environment, at least for on the underneath the surface, you know, and that's what's the stuff that really fascinates me is like, how do you you know, kind of score what's not there on the screen? You know, how do you bring out the, you know, the undertones of the story?
And the thing that that really struck me about the tracks that I've heard so far is that they just sound so ancient. They sound like they've been part of this culture and this world forever. And it's really neat because it sort of brings this sense of ancient history, like this place has been around forever. So I think you really nailed it in that aspect with it, you know, providing a sense of history with the game.
Oh, thank you. And that was, you know, partially instrumentation. I chose instruments that were, you know, very old sounding instruments, like the viola da gamba is a Baroque instrument, sort of like it looks like a cello, but it has seven strings and it has resonators in it. So it has this kind of buzzy Baroque sound.
Yeah. That was an interesting choice because I can't think of another game that's had a viola da gamba in it.
As well as Hardanger fiddle, which is a you know, Norwegian instrument. And it has these resonators. Everything kind of has this kind of buzzy resonance and unpolished kind of sound, which kind of helps with the sort of a raw, primitive, ancient sound. And, you know, the challenge has been in mixing is to make sure that everything is still pleasant to listen to, not too bright and bitey. You don't want it to be, you know, while the players are playing, you don't want the music to be, you know, calling too much attention. But, you know, using instruments like that kind of does kind of right away make the music, whatever I write, makes it sound very, you know, ancient and primitive.
Yeah. And then you got Einar Selvik. From the band Ward Runa, the kind of Norwegian Viking folk band, with his incredible voice as well. And when you were talking about overtones just now with the viola da gamba and the Hardanger fiddle, I can kind of hear almost some overtones in his voice too. So it's a really neat blend of all these different ancient sounding things.
Yeah, that was a wonderful opportunity to get to work with him. I've been a fan for a long time. And, you know, when I started work on the music, I thought of him right away. I thought, you know, for some reason, the vocal music seemed to resonate with the project. It wasn't my intention at first when I was working on the trailer. It was kind of, you know, I was trying to find a way to give it a trailer vibe, but also kind of establish a little bit of the sound of the game. And for some reason, you know, vocals seemed to resonate with the stuff. And I guess it was that ancient kind of spiritual aspect of it. And, I thought of Ward Runa, and I was admittedly influenced by their music in working on this. And I thought I had written some vocals, you know, with him in mind, you know, wondering, hey, I wonder if he'd be interested in doing this. And I'm grateful that he was. The best part about it is, you know, he not only brought this amazing voice that, you know, elevates the music to a different level, but he brought his own experience with Norwegian mythology and Viking mythology, and he set some of the music to lyrics from Old Norse poems, which it's a whole different level. And the words he chose, you know, fit the game perfectly. And these are details that most people aren't going to catch, you know, when they're listening. It's sort of like there's extra layers that can be peeled away over time.
What I really am so curious about is how these kinds of collaborations work with artists like Einar and Rachel Nesvig, the Hardanger fiddle performer, because this is kind of uncharted territory for you, I would imagine. So is there a synergy that kind of gets going with lots of ideas getting thrown around?
Yeah, and the other thing too that is interesting about this one is it's an international production in a lot of ways. Einar's from Norway. Rachel's from Seattle. The viola da gamba player Philip Serna is in Chicago. And I have a singer named Celica Soldream in Spain. So gonna have musicians from all over the world contributing. And I'm also planning on working with a nickel harpa player from Germany.
Oh, wow. All these instruments. That's just, oh, what a great sound. So are they all recording their things just individually and then sending them, or do you have like Skype
sessions?
Yeah,
they're basically I send them, you know, the tracks to record on, and as well as, you know, parts, the PDF parts that they can read. And then I give them sort of a detailed description of what I'm looking for, which usually, and this is the case if I'm in the studio with a musician or doing it remotely, is I always try to start with, you know, this is the part I've written, you know, play it straight without much embellishment. And then on the next pass, give me a little more of what the instrument can do, a little more of the inflections of the whatever nationality the instrument comes from. And then we go further and further into that. And there gets to a point where they're playing pretty much freely, interpreting the music as if they had been playing it on that instrument their whole life, as if it was part of the repertoire of that country that the instrument came from. And that brings out an authenticity to it. But they're still at the core is the basic melody I wrote.
Yeah. And what's so interesting about it, there's one particular track called Night One with the Hardanger fiddle. And again, it sounds like it's just so organic, like it's this ancient, ancient melody that has been around in the culture forever. And I guess that's how you get to that point with just letting them kind of assimilate what you've written.
And then what I end up doing is taking those files and I edit together something that sounds a little more cohesive. But definitely giving the players a chance to do what they do best and to play the instrument the way they have learned to play it. I could study an instrument my entire life and not be able to write something that is going to really resonate with it as well as somebody that's been playing it their whole life. You know, these instruments are very personal to the players, and they have their own experiences with them. And culturally, you know, in the case of sometimes working with Chinese instruments, you know, those, we're talking about a different culture. People have grown up in a different culture, listening to different music, and have all these different experiences that all come through the instrument. So it's kind of, the challenge is channeling that into something that fits the music that I've been doing, that I wrote through my own perspective, my Western upbringing, and all that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I know with Revelation Online, you did work with Chinese musicians, and even though, you know, they say that music isn't an international language, a universal language, you know, it is when you're listening to it, I guess, but when you have to write it and write music that's kind of idiomatic for instruments that you really don't know, at one point do you stop feeling like a tourist and like you just are really now into their sound and what those instruments can do?
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge, to step into something, an area like that, where I don't have any previous training or experience. I had worked on World of Warcraft Mists of Pandaria that was very Chinese influenced.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were able to go a certain way into there. And there was, you know, a lot of study involved in that, and just learning about the instruments and the scales and listening to a lot of music. But with Revelation, you know, they approached me, it's a Chinese company, approached me to write a Chinese score for the Chinese market. It was a tremendously flattering, but also, you know, daunting task. And just a lot of research went into it, a lot of listening and kind of immersion, really, just kind of listening to nothing but that for a couple weeks. And then the ideas start to come, and they start to sound, you know, very, very much in that realm.
Yeah.
And to answer your question about does it ever feel like you're just coming home, I definitely, as time has gone on, I've done more and more of these projects. It's the time it takes me to get back into the groove is shorter and shorter, but it still does take a little bit of, you know, conscious effort to get back into it.
Yeah, well, it must be like, you know, if you learned French in college maybe, and then you go to Paris, and it after a little bit of immersion, it does kind of come back. And I was in Brussels one time and had taken French in college, and all of a sudden I remembered that, oh yeah, Omar, that's the word for lobster. And but if you had asked me, you know, I wouldn't have remembered. But I think what's so interesting and what you do so well is to have a really interesting fusion of music from other cultures, rather than, you know, treating it in kind of a ethnomusicologist sort of way, where it's like really accurate to whatever the culture is. You're really, really sensitive to, you know, keeping the integrity of it and yet making it sound like a blend of cultures, a fusion of cultures. And so were you able to do that same thing with the music for Rend?
With Rend, it's I'm not trying as hard to make it like authentic, you know, Norwegian music or authentic anything, really. I think it's just I'm influenced by those cultures for sure. And the world itself is not quite as specifically one place or one idea. And it almost has this sort of fantasy, almost sci-fi, you know, tint to it in a way. So I'm kind of taking all of that and kind of creating a blend of these different elements and sounds, but I am trying to kind of focus it towards the more ancient primal instruments and sounds. But yeah, it's a lot different than Revelation in terms of, you know, making it sound authentic, or trying to make it sound authentic.
Each one of the factions in Rend has their own kind of unique characteristics and, I guess, personalities in a way, their qualities. And I was wondering if you were able to kind of use that and create distinctive music for each one of the factions.
At this point in the game, we're doing kind of covering a broader experience, sort of the music that you experience as you kind of build your you know, you build your world, you hunt and find your weapons and you fight. The night music, I was going to say the music of the night, but that's something different. The night music is, you know, sort of changes as the you experience dusk and nights and days in the game. So the night music has a little bit of just sort of a more ethereal, mysterious quality to it, not quite as present. And so, and then we have music for you know, when monsters attack and for caves and different places like that. But I imagine as time goes on, we'll probably add more music to the game and get more specific with that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I know you are a seasoned veteran of writing battle music with your music for Overwatch and WoW. And what, are you doing anything differently for the battle music with Rend?
I'm trying to make it as different as I can. Every project I work on, I try to make, you know, bring something different to it. And, you know, it's the same kind of thing with Rend. It's just kind of very primal. And, you know, there's a lot of percussion with the battle stuff, which I've done plenty of that, but I'm just kind of trying to give it a slightly different sound. And using a lot of, you know, a lot of these instruments I mentioned, kind of using them in a different way, kind of manipulating the sound a bit and just making everything sound like it's coming from a different time and a different place.
You know, game soundtracks now are such an integral part of a game's release. And in fact, a lot of times they're bundled with a deluxe edition and that kind of thing. So what are your plans for a soundtrack for Rend?
I would absolutely love to release a soundtrack for Rend. I mean, it's very different. And, you know, getting to work with a singer like A&R from Wardruna, it takes the music to a different level. So, yeah, absolutely. The first priority right now is to get music ready for the early access release and the game release. And then after that, I'm going to start focusing on, you know, kind of developing it for a soundtrack, because sometimes, you know, music in games might not always lend itself to the soundtrack format in terms of like listenability. But what I've done, like in the case of Revelation, is I've gone through and taken some of the pieces, extended them a bit, and kind of create a more of a flow to the music.
That's so interesting. And I've heard that from a couple other composers too, because working on a soundtrack album gives them a chance to really expand on the ideas that, maybe we're just little stems in the game or that kind of thing. And as a player and as a music listener, it's really just so great to be able to take the music with you and, you know, pretend you're in a Viking longboat while you're on the Merritt Parkway or something.
Yeah.
This game, actually, it hasn't been in development for very long, like not even quite a year, which is a pretty quick development cycle. Did that affect at all how you worked on the music? I mean, were you faced with some kind of scary and immediate deadlines to come up with stuff?
Well, my job is dealing with scary and immediate deadlines every day. So nothing at this point really scares me. Not to mention the fact I started out in TV and we'd have to deliver an entire show every week, so the game schedules have actually been fairly relaxed compared to what I'm used to from the TV world.
Well, how do you deal with writer's block when it comes up?
That's the eternal question. I'm always trying to find a better way to kind of keep the creativity flowing, and I think that the trick is just knowing when it's not going to happen, knowing when I've run out of steam and it's time to take a break, because sometimes you feel like you have to keep pushing on and you have all these deadlines and you have to kind of keep producing every day, and at some point you can only push on for so long. So taking a strategic night off or day off every once in a while is important, knowing when to do that, knowing when to push on. But really, the creativity is, it's sort of, I always equate it to like being visited by this small, shy child. And the child is only going to come visit when the environment is calm and peaceful and, you know, under the right conditions. So if there's chaos, if there's clutter, various things like that, all those things are going to kind of keep that creative visit from wanting to come.
That's such an amazing way of thinking about it.
Yeah. So I'm always conscious of how can I make that visit more likely to happen and more likely to continue, you know, because once it begins, once you get on this creative roll, you need to stay on it as long as you can, ride the wave as long as you can. So, you know, I have, my studio is full of Star Wars stuff, this big Star Wars collection, because that takes me back to the place when I was 6 years old and anything was possible. I felt like, you know, I wanted to be a part of these movies and I wanted to make movies and make, you know, help people experience stories this way. And whether that was, you know, doing special effects or art or anything, you know, and of course, you know, music, I was familiar with John Williams at the time, you know, even as a young kid, just wanted to be a part of that somehow. So surrounding myself with things that kind of take me back to that place, helps me. That's part of the process.
Yeah, I was curious about how you do create a nice, welcoming environment for inspiration to kind of come in, and that's so cool.
Another thing too is I've noticed when I go to visit Blizzard, everyone's cubicle is full of like different collectibles or different things that, you know, resonate with them, and we're talking like walls of, you know, boxed toys or different, you know, paintings or different things. Like every cubicle is dramatically different than the other one, but similar in that it's full of the things that inspire those people there, those artists, those audio people, those, you know, programmers.
Early on in your career, you worked with setting up the recording studios and the gear for really incredible film composers like Jerry Goldsmith and James Horner and Hans Zimmer. And I'm wondering, with that sort of fly-on-the-wall perspective that you had, is there anything that you learned from them about getting the most out of a recording session or getting the most out of musicians that you're still using today?
Yeah, that was an incredible time. And you know, starting doing cartage was not the most glamorous way to get into the business. And I actually never intended to do that, to get into the business that way. But it was an opportunity I had. And I was amazed by all the amazing people I got to meet doing that. And yeah, just getting to watch Jerry Goldsmith, it was very efficient in his, the way he ran a session. You know, he got a lot of music done in a short period of time. James Horner, on the other hand, you know, would take, let's say there'd be this 7 or 8 minute cue. He was famous for doing these really long, some dramatic scene towards the end of the film would have this like really long music kept going. Most people would break it up into several small cues. Horner would kind of record this seven, let's say even a 14 minute long cue, record the entire thing, start from beginning to end. And if there was anything wrong that happened during that or anything less than perfect, he'd start at the beginning and go all the way through and keep doing that until he had something pretty good. And then maybe if there was, you know, some problem area, he'd go back and record something, you know, to splice in. But he tried to avoid that. But, you know, Jerry, on the other hand, was a lot more practical and kind of trying to be more efficient and save money. So he would, you know, kind of record in smaller chunks or just be a little more efficient. And he was proud of that. I remember there was a time, and they had a little bit of a rivalry too. There's a time when, Jerry finished a cue and he's like, you know, that's a lot faster than the Horner did it, you know, does it. And just getting to see the different styles of how people did things is incredibly valuable. And that definitely, it's in the back of my head every time I'm, you know, producing a session of my own.
Yeah, I bet. Because you've written some really incredible music for the cinematics, for World of Warcraft and for Overwatch. And it must just be an amazing feeling to be in front of the orchestra and hearing your music coming out of these, you know, this amazing ensemble.
That's the part of the reason I got into this in the first place, is the opportunity to have my music performed by orchestras. And it never gets old. And the best part is going out right before a session, and all the musicians are warming up on their instruments, and you hear little fragments of melodies you might have written echoing out through all the players. They might be practicing something, but it's like this the sound of something. Maybe a couple days earlier I was, you know, writing this melody on my keyboard, and next thing you know, it's out there being played by this amazing orchestra. It just blows my mind every time.
Yeah, I bet. Well, and it kind of, you know, calls to mind music from a couple hundred years ago, where Beethoven would write a symphony like and finish it up the night before and then hand it to the musicians, and they've got to play it with the ink practically still wet. So
I guess that's the old last minute creative burst is as old as time itself.
Yeah, for sure. You've had now such a long career with Blizzard, and it must be fun because they keep reinventing themselves and keep reinventing the games and coming up with new ideas for Overwatch and for WoW. Was it hard to assimilate that really distinctive Blizzard sound when you first got there?
That's a great question. I was, you know, influenced obviously by Jason Hayes, who had really established the sound of Warcraft and of World of Warcraft. And my first assignment at Blizzard was to do the music for the Burning Crusade cinematic, which was the first expansion for World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. So there was obviously, it was important that the music kind of felt like a continuation of that. And I listened to a lot of, you know, Jason stuff and stuff that Russell Brower, the new audio director at the time, was working on. And, I mean, the thing, I think a lot of WoW stuff was, you know, influenced by popular, you know, like Lord of the Rings and like things like that. So I like could sort of influenced by the cinematic world. So I kind of brought my own cinematic experience, my own love of movie scores and stuff to that. And I think that kind of helped that, you know, transition be fairly smooth. I scored it like I would have scored a movie. And I think part of the reason I got the job in the first place was I was coming from a film background, and I had that experience working with picture.
And it must be fun to do the cinematics, because there's no guesswork, kind of. You don't know, you know, what you're going to need to do to accommodate what a player is doing, because with the cinematics, they are like little movies, which must be kind of fun to write to.
Paint by numbers.
Well, I'm sure there's more to it than that.
Yeah, there is for sure. And, you know, one of the things that sometimes makes writing for picture easier is that, you know, if there's danger on the screen, there's tension, then, you know, kind of the picture will inform the music and kind of give you a pace right off the bat. So there's not a lot of guesswork in that, but obviously there's so many different ways you can score the same thing. And also what I love to do is I love to try to score what's, you know, beneath the surface and not necessarily just be like just accentuating the stuff that you're seeing on the screen, although I do plenty of that too.
Yeah, the cinematic that you've done for Overwatch with the two dragons is absolutely stunning. I mean, I really got choked up with that.
I did too. You know, watching it the first time with even with the temp music, just the story, their story writing and the way they put together, you know, a piece is incredible. And all that's in there before the music even gets in there. So it's my job just to kind of try to amplify that.
Yeah, and you totally did, because, wow, that was a very intense 8 minutes.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun to work on, too. I mean, the story, the imagery, all that, and getting to work in that, you know, the Asian sort of style, again, is it's always fun. And to do it in that kind of way, in a very big, epic way, but also to have this kind of have a underlying heart and emotion to the story. I love with music, no matter what I do, it's always trying to kind of bring out the emotion of the scene and kind of create an emotional experience, because that's what I get out of music. I have an emotional experience when I watch a movie or when I listen to music. So I try to create that for the listener. And, you know, so many wonderful opportunities from Blizzard to do that, to write emotional music.
Oh, yeah, because that story now, it's been going on for so long with so many different characters and factions and twists and turns with the story and the expansions and stuff. It really seems like a living world at this point that you can just keep going back to over and over again. You know, you've been in this industry long enough now in the game music industry, and there's been a huge revolution, I think. But I'm wondering if there are any things or any styles that you know from being on the inside that you think have really changed what game music can be.
That's a great question. You know, I still feel like a relative newcomer to game music. I've been doing it for 10 years, but, you know, there's so much history, you know, before that. And I feel like when I got into the industry, it was right at the beginning, or there was sort of a new movement of experimentation, you know, like works like Gary Scheinman's BioShock,
yeah,
with, you know, his understated string quartet, playing, you know, postmodern music, and, you know, Austin Wintory's Journey, just a lot of different stuff that you hadn't heard before that you wouldn't have expected in games. And that's one of the things that made me fall in love with the industry and the art form, is the opportunity to experiment and to create, you know, try different things that hadn't been done before. I mean, I can't even remember how long it's been, you know, in the film industry since that, you know, happened. Seems like a lot of the film industry now is kind of focused more on creating something familiar that, you know, people are going to maximize your box office profits by having something familiar that people will go to. But with the game industry, you know, and not with every single title, but there's just the there's a lot more experimentation, there's a lot more creativity is encouraged for sure.
Yeah, and I think what's so cool about it is that as you're playing a game, you get exposed to so much different kind of music that you maybe wouldn't seek out on your own. Like, well, for one thing, you know, Viking and ancient Norwegian folk music in Rend and Asian music. So it sounds like it's a really great time to be a game composer.
It is, and I, you know, I've written things for games that I, you know, would love to have written for a big Hollywood movie, you know, or could have written for a big Hollywood movie, but I have the opportunity to write them for games and create that a similar experience for the listener.
In your spare time, I mean, not that you probably have very much, but you've been creating these really amazing kind of fantasy instruments, your music creations. And First of all, I mean, how did you come up with the idea for these, you know, violins with gears and guitars with little cranks and that kind of thing?
It was in Austin, Texas, which is a very interesting city. Very, you know, their slogan is "Keep Austin Weird,"
mm-hmm.
and it definitely you get that vibe everywhere you go. But there was, you know, some of the shops there, they had some very interesting sculptures and that kind of. What I'll do sometimes is I'll see something because I have a, you know, artistic background, and I'll see things and I'll be like, oh, I could do that. And then I've said that for years, like, you know, I see something someone else does and I think, oh, I could make that too. And I decided to, you know, actually, why don't I actually do that? Why don't I actually try to create something similar to that? And ended up kind of going down the music route for obvious reasons, and kind of found some parts, you know, and decided to combine a violin with clock parts, and that led to a few different other variations. But it's been a lot of fun, and you know, I always want to stay creative, and I always want to keep doing something. I'm not very good with, you know, idle time or just sitting around not accomplishing anything. So when I'm not creating music, if I'm creating something else, something artistic or you know, from the visual side, then I kind of feel like I'm keeping the creative hamster wheel turning, and it makes me feel at ease. It makes me feel like I'm accomplishing something. So yeah, it's like whenever I stop working on music, I'm usually just start, you know, working on something else, and that, you know, takes up all my time.
Yeah, well, it's just I'm really, every time I see one of the photographs, and they're beautifully photographed too, I kind of get intrigued by how they would sound if they actually, you know, you could play them. So it's really neat.
Yeah, the next step obviously is trying to find something, make something that could actually play, and that's the harder than it looks, though.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Well, right now they look like kind of if Jules Verne had designed musical instruments, that's mm-hmm. what they would look like. Wow, Neil, it has been so much fun to spend some time talking with you, and Rend sounds like it's going to be an amazing game, and I know there will be more in the pipeline from Overwatch and WoW too. And boy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate. It was my pleasure.